This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
We are listening to specific testimony from throughout the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell. We're now going to listen to ISP forensic scientist Tara Martinez testifying in the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell.
Before we begin the testimony here, let me just inquire of the witness briefly. Have you previously reviewed any of the trial testimony in this case, either by listening to it from any source or by viewing any of the viewing locations here reading any of it?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you for that. So with that in mind, in your testimony, please make sure to make verbal responses to any questions so we keep the record clear. Please try to avoid speaking at the same time of anyone that's questioning you. With that in mind, then, Ms. Smith, if you'd like to inquire on direct, you can do so.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Will you introduce yourself to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury, please, and spell your last name?
Yes, my name is Tara Martinez, M-A-R-T-I-N-E-Z.
Okay. Ma'am, how are you employed?
I work for Idaho State Police Forensic Services.
Okay. What is your title?
Forensic Scientist 2.
Okay. And what do you do as a forensic scientist at the lab?
So I'm in the latent print section, so that means I process items of evidence to develop latent prints, and then I compare those fingerprints, and then I respond to crime scenes.
Okay. How long have you been at the Idaho State Lab?
7 years.
Okay. Do you have any special training to do your job duties?
Yes, I first have a Bachelor's of Science in Biological Science with a minor in Chemistry and a specialization in Forensic Science. And then I also went through a very extensive training program with the Idaho State Police Forensic Services, which included mock courts, testing, both written and verbal, as well as exercises, and I also had some external training.
Okay. And I don't know if I heard, forgive me, where did you graduate?
California State University, East Bay.
Okay. And are you a member of any professional organizations related to your job?
Yes, the International Association for Identification. I'm also a member of their Pacific Northwest Division.
Now, you earlier said that you process latent prints.
I process items of evidence to develop latent prints or in hopes of developing latent prints.
Okay. What is a latent print?
A latent print, latent means unseen. So a latent print is something that generally you can't see on a surface and is left unintentionally. So if I'm touching this desk here, I might accidentally leave a print behind. That would be a latent print.
Now, what is the process used to develop a latent print in your examinations?
So it depends on the item. When I get an item into our laboratory, I'll first look at what is the item made out of, meaning is the item porous or non-porous? So like water bottles and glass and things like that are non-porous, meaning they don't absorb water, whereas porous would be paper. So I look at things like that to see what kind of surface this is. Then I would look at maybe the texture of the item, the color of the item, and these things would help me figure out what process would be most successful.
Okay. Now, do people always leave latent prints?
No. It depends on a variety of factors. First and foremost is you individually. Some people just have better skin to leave latent prints. Maybe they sweat a little bit more. Maybe they produce more amino acids. And so they're therefore able to leave better prints and more frequently leave prints behind. And then also the surface makes a big difference. Is it dusty? Is it dirty? Those kinds of surfaces won't generally leave latent prints behind. And then is the item textured? So all of these things factor into if you'll leave a latent print behind.
If a latent print is left behind, how is it you would collect a latent print?
So on a typical non-porous item, like, you know, water bottle, you know, metal, things like that, I first look at the item unaided, just my normal eye, to see if I see any latent prints that maybe are left behind in a little sweat. If I don't see anything, then I'll move forward and I'll look with an alternate light source, which is just a different, gives you different colors of light. Try again to see if anything's left behind. Then I'll actually start the real processing, which starts with cyanoacrylate fuming or superglue fuming. And basically the superglue vaporizes into the air, becoming a gas, and it attaches into the latent print. It just attaches to the moisture in your print. So because prints are a lot of water, the glue likes to attach to the print. After that, I do a dye stain, which is generally makes the whole item stained, but again, it's more attracted to the glue prints because they're a different texture than the rest of the item. And then once that's done, I powder the item. So that's kind of like a general for like a non-porous item.
So when you talk, a lot of us think of fingerprinting as just dusting it with some powder. It sounds like there are multiple other steps.
Yes, dusting is one way to do it, but there are a lot of different techniques depending upon the item and what you're trying to look at.
Okay. If any of those processes work and you're able to sort of have a latent print appear, how do you go about comparing it to someone or something?
So the methodology is ACE-V. Each letter stands for something. So the first is A for analysis. So I have this print. I've developed it from processing. And I'm looking at the print overall to see, first, do I know what area of skin this print is from? Is it from the palm of your hand or is it from a fingertip? Stuff like that. And then I'll look at it to see what kind of distortion it has. Every print is going to have a little bit of distortion. So I'm going to see, is it smeared? Is it spotty? Things like that. And then I'll look at, overall, do I think this print has value for comparison? Do I think it has enough information to be able to move on to the next step? And so the next step would be C, stands for comparison. And at that point, I'm doing the back and forth between the unknown print, meaning the latent print, and the known print. And I'm comparing the two to see the details in the unknown print, do they match the known print, or do they not match the known print? And so I'm going back and forth to see, are the details similar? Are they spaced the same? Do they appear to look the same? And then after that, I go to E, which is evaluation. So at that point, I'm saying, do I think that these two came from the same source, the unknown and the known? Or do I think they didn't come from the same source and I can exclude the two? Or third option would be, do I not have enough information to say either way? Is the print going to be inconclusive? And then at that point, I'm done with what I'm doing. And then the V stands for verification. So another analyst comes behind me and starts the process all over again.
Okay. So just so that I'm clear, because there was a lot there. All right. Analysis, you look at the latent print to see if it's of sufficient quality to compare to something.
Yes.
All right. And then you do a comparison.
Yes.
All right. So if you have a latent print left of an object, how would you find something to compare it to?
Generally, that information comes from the agency. They'll let us know these are the persons that could be involved in this case, and then I can get the fingerprints, the known prints from them directly, or I could get them through our database. So it just depends.
Okay, so when you say known prints, that's prints that someone took from someone who had an ID on them or have been identified with a particular person.
Yes.
Okay. And so you take the unknown that's on a surface, and you compare it to known people that you have prints for.
Yes.
And you said something about a database. What do you mean a database?
Yes, so there's a few different databases we use. They're law enforcement databases, and the people could be in the database for a variety of different reasons. And so we can generally pull prints from that database to help us with our comparison.
Okay. Do you also sometimes go out and get prints from individuals so that you have copies as well?
Yes.
Okay. And then the evaluation process, was that the E?
That is the E.
Okay. And that is where you look at them to see whether you believe they're a match.
Yes.
Okay. And then verification process, that's when somebody else basically double checks your work?
Yeah, they start from the beginning. So they do their own analysis, their own comparison, and then they have to do their own evaluation, and then we have to come to some agreement.
Okay. So let's turn to your lab. I believe it's 2020, and then the numbers are 2233. Are you familiar with that lab number?
Yes.
Okay. Is that the lab number associated with Chad Daybell, Lori Vallow, J.J. Vallow, and Tylee Ryan?
Yes.
Okay. What was your first contact, if any, with that lab number?
My first contact was we were requested, myself and someone else was requested from our laboratory to assist Rexburg Police Department at the coroner's office to help obtain prints from J.J. Vallow.
Okay. And did you go to the coroner's office and get J.J.'s fingerprints?
Yes.
Okay. Did you have any other contacts with that case?
Yes, I later went to both Rexburg and St. Anthony to obtain fingerprints, footprints or foot exemplars, buckle swabs, and hair samples from Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell.
Okay. So you got fingerprint samples and samples that could be used in DNA?
Yes.
All right. Those would be their known prints and their known DNA sample?
Yes.
All right. Did you also obtain any known samples from Alex Cox?
I obtained known samples, not myself. So I got some through two different means. The first was the FBI database, or they're on file with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, a fingerprint card. And then later I received other fingerprints from Gilbert Police Department in Arizona.
As a result of Alex Cox's autopsy?
Yes.
So you had two different known samples from Alex Cox?
Yes.
All right. Now, turning to that, in this case, did you do any actual latent print examinations?
Yes, I did latent print processing and comparison.
Okay. Can you tell us how you came in contact with the evidence that was submitted to the ISP lab in this case?
Yes, so I checked out items 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and 18, and then I subsequently processed those items to try to develop latent prints.
Okay, let's break those down just so that we have a clear picture of what specific evidence you looked at. So item 10, what was your item 10?
Item 10 was a white drawstring bag with gray-colored duct-type tape described from the agency as a bag around head JJ.
Okay. So it was a white bag that was around JJ's head.
That's what I was told, yes.
Okay, and that was identified as lab number 10.
Yes.
Okay. What was lab number 11?
Lab number 11 was a bundle or a mass of plastic bags and gray-colored duct-type tape. The gray-colored duct-type tape was labeled by myself as 11.1 through 11.11, and then the bags were labeled 11.12 through 11.15. And these were described by the agency as body bag and plastic, JJ.
Okay. So when you say body bag and plastic, was it the plastic, a black plastic with gray duct tape on it?
Yes, the item that I processed was a black pieces of black plastic and gray-colored duct-type tape, but it was submitted to me in a plastic body-type bag.
Okay. And you processed that. Let's just quickly talk about how you processed it without getting into the late print analysis. What did you have to do so that you could process that item 11, the black plastic with the gray duct tape on it?
So first, a lot of the duct tape was attached to itself. So to be able to process it fully, both the non-adhesive side or the non-sticky side and then the sticky side, I had to take it apart from itself. So all the plastic was pulled apart from the tape, and the tape was pulled apart from itself, and hairs were collected during that process. And then I proceeded to do the non-porous processing sequence, like I mentioned earlier. But the duct tape, because it has an adhesive side, I added an additional process that targets that area.
Okay. Well, there was a couple of things in there I want to make sure I understand. So that the tape that was attached to the black plastic and identified to you is from body bag, right? You took that tape apart?
Yes.
Right? You pulled it apart?
Yes.
Okay. And then did you examine the black plastic?
Yes, both were processed for latent prints, both the plastic pieces and the duct tape. They were just pulled apart from one another to be able to process individually.
And then in item 11, you indicated something about hairs. You found hairs?
Yes, anytime I'm processing an item and I find hairs, even though I don't process hairs, I collect them so that someone else may be able to do so. So I collected hairs in this item and put them back in its original packaging to be used later if needed.
Okay, and so when you say collected hairs, it's hairs off of that black plastic and the duct tape, the gray duct tape.
Yes.
Okay. So item 12, what was item 12?
Item 12 was one piece of gray-colored duct-type tape said by the agency to have been tape from mouth, JJ.
Okay. And what is item 13?
Item 13 was one mass of duct-type tape, gray again, and that was said to be from ankles of JJ.
Okay. And item 14?
Item 14 was also a mass of a bunch of duct-type tape, and that was said by the agency to be from hands of JJ.
Okay. And item 15?
I didn't have item 15.
I'm sorry, I misspoke.
18.
18.
18 was one green-colored Letica Corporation piece of plastic, and that was said from the agency to be bucket bag 2 of 3 Tylee.
Okay. And what color was that?
Green.
Okay. So item 10, did you process it for the presence of any latent prints?
Yes.
Okay. Did you develop any usable prints on that white bag that was labeled JJ had?
No.
There were no usable prints on item 10?
No.
Okay. On item 11, that gray duct tape on the black plastic, did you develop any usable prints on item 11?
Yes.
Okay. Item 12, did you develop any usable prints on item 12, the piece of gray duct tape? I believe you said hands?
That was mouth.
That was mouth.
And no.
And item 13?
Yes, I developed latent prints.
Okay, and that was around?
That was around the feet of JJ, or said to be.
Around, item 13 was around what?
The feet, I'm sorry.
Okay. And item 14?
That was the tape around the hands, and I did not develop any latent prints there.
Okay. Were you able to pull any hairs off of that item 14?
I don't recall. I think there was hairs off of all the items, but I'd have to look at my notes to see specifically how many.
Okay. And were you able to develop any prints off of item 18?
No.
Okay. So just to be clear, which items did you get usable prints off of?
11 and 13.
Okay. Let's talk initially about item 13. Were you able to, after you developed some prints on item 13, were you able to compare them to any known samples?
Yes.
Okay. What knowns did you compare the prints on item 13 to?
Lori Vallow, Chad Daybill, JJ Vallow, and Alexander Lamar Cox.
Okay. And were you able to reach a definitive conclusion about whether they matched any of those individuals?
No.
So was there an inconclusive finding?
There was an inconclusive finding on both of them for two different reasons.
What were those reasons?
One was it's latent print 13.1, and that was because of the quality of the print. Sometimes if the print just is very poor quality and doesn't provide a lot of information, it may be pushed through to I can compare this print, but I just can't be certain on these details and can't rely upon them. So it ends up being inconclusive due to the quality of the print. The other one was inconclusive because of the area of skin the latent print was thought to have come from. I didn't have good recordings of those areas. So it was inconclusive, needing better knowns.
Okay. Now, what about item 11? You received usable prints. Were they of sufficient quality that you could do a comparison?
Yes.
Okay. In anticipation of your trial today, did you prepare an exhibit to aid you in explaining where you got those prints to the jury?
Yes.
Okay. Let me have, Your Honor, if I may I have the witness handed State's Exhibit 210, a copy of which has been given to both the court and the defense?
Yes.
Do you recognize the pictures that are in State's Exhibit 210?
Yes.
What are they?
The first photo is an overall picture I generally take when I first receive the evidence in, so I can take it as to show how the evidence looked before I did any processing. So that's the first photo, and this is showing item 11.
Okay.
Would you like me to keep moving
on?
Yeah,
okay. We'll have you describe each of them for the record, and then we'll show them all at once if they're admitted and the court permits.
Okay.
What's the second one?
The second photo is of item 11.12, so part of item 11 that has been, I've numbered out instead of just being item 11 with everything. This is 11.12. And the processing is done on the item, and I marked the latent print that I developed. So you can see an overall picture showing that this is where the print was found on the item.
Okay. And are each of those images fair and accurate pictures of what your observations were and of item 11 that you processed at the ISP lab in this case?
Yes.
Your Honor, I move for the admission of State's Exhibit 210.
I have one more. Did you want me to look at the last one?
Oh, yes.
The last one is a picture of 11.15. So again, it's a piece of item 11 that was processed, and it shows my marking showing that where the latent print was developed on this item.
With that record, Your Honor, I move for the admission of State's Exhibit 210.
Okay, and I just want to make clear, Counselor, before it's admitted and published, there were some modifications from the exhibit to the court's courtesy copy and counsel's, I believe, so.
Yes, Judge. It should be an exhibit of total of 3 pages, as discussed at sidebar, which would be the cover page and 2 pages with images shown to defense counsel and the court.
Okay, with the exhibit limited to that, which will be submitted as evidence to the jury, is there any objection from the defense?
Given that explanation, Your Honor, we have no objection.
Okay, then the exhibit will be admitted. That's 210.
Thank you. And permission to display for the jurors, Judge?
You may publish it.
Thanks. So the front page of 210 is just a title page, correct?
Yes.
Your name, your position, and your lab number?
Yes.
Okay. And moving to the second page of 210, could you describe for the record and for the jurors what we're seeing in the second page of State's Exhibit 210?
Yes. So on the left, you're seeing on...
Sorry for moving it on you.
It's okay. On the left photo, you can see there's 2 different black bag kind of images. So on the right one, the one that looks like it has handles, that is what I'm calling the body type bag that the item was delivered in. On the left of that is the black plastic and the duct type tape that is item 11, and that was the actual item that was processed. The one
Would
with
you
the
do
handles.
Me a favor, just a second.
Yeah.
Just do me a favor. If you could you show the jurors which one you processed, please, using the laser pointer
yes.
that's up there?
Of course. So this is the item that was processed, and then this is the item that was not processed. So this is just basically packaging. That's how I used it.
Okay.
And so
let me ask you a question. You were pointing at the picture under which the title is called item 11, correct?
Yes.
And on the left-hand side of that picture was the item you processed?
Yes.
And on the right-hand of that particular picture was the item you call packaging?
Yes.
Is that the item that the duct tape and the bags came in?
Yes.
All right. And what about the picture on the right-hand side of the second page? I believe it's labeled item 11.12.
Yes, so this item here, item 11 in its entirety, was multiple pieces of plastic. Well, not multiple pieces. I'm sorry. Let me correct that statement. A piece of black plastic with multiple pieces of tape on it. So taken apart, this is the bag in its entirety, is this picture on the right-hand side. And this is after processing. So what you're seeing here is just the bag part, and it's to show that this print here was marked. So that is print 11.12.1.
So when you say the print, that was the print that surfaced after you processed?
Yes.
Very generally, how did you process the item 11 so that the print 11.12 was visible?
So because there was both plastic and tape, I used 2 different processes. So I did the first process, like I described earlier, where I did visual and then alternate light source visual, and then the glue fuming, followed by the dye stain, followed by the powder. That's what I did on the bag. On the tape, I did the same thing, but I added a step, which is using a liquid powder that adheres to the adhesive side of the tape to try to visualize prints on the adhesive side.
Okay. And I know you said earlier that usable prints were developed. Were they developed on what part of 11 and 11.12?
On the plastic portion, not on the duct tape portion.
Okay. And are we able to see, there appears to be some handwriting up in the corner of that picture. What is that?
This green Post-it note here?
Yes.
Yes. That's just my labeling system. I'm adding an additional label because the picture's taken so far away because the item is so large. I added a little note there to show.
Okay. And then there appears to be some yellow up at the top of the image.
The marking? Yes. So the half moon mark is just how we draw our orientation. So for a print, that's my indication of what I think the orientation of the print is. And then I'm just drawing on it to show that that's the latent number. So this particular photo is showing that the latent is kind of angled and the print number is 11.12.1.
Okay. And so is that the area on the tape, on the bag, I apologize, the area on the black plastic where you found a latent print?
Yes.
Okay. And when you say the orientation, that's the sort of the direction the print was facing or going on that black plastic?
Yes.
Okay. And so once you were able to develop latent print 11.12, were you able then to take and compare it to any knowns?
Yes.
Did that comparison yield any results?
Yes.
What were those results?
I identified 11.12.1 to the right little finger of the card bearing the name Alexander Lamar Cox.
Were you able on this item to make any more conclusions about latent prints on item 11?
Yes, I have another latent that was developed on this item.
And what was that latent number?
11.15.1.
Okay. Turning to the third page of your exhibit, what are we looking at?
This is a picture of the part of item 11 that had fallen off during processing, so it was part of the original bag. And this is showing the item after it was done processing, again showing my marking for the latent in this green yellowy color here.
Okay. And what number, I'm sorry, is it? It's kind of far away from me to see. What number was that latent identified as?
11.15.1.
Okay. And was there sufficient quality to that print for you to be able to do any comparison to that one?
Yes.
Who did you compare it to? What knowns did you compare it to?
For both prints, I compared to Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell, J.J. Vallow, and Alexander Cox.
Okay. And did your comparison yield any conclusions?
Yes. I identified it to the right palm, so this part of your hand in here, to Alexander Lamar Cox.
Okay. And so evaluation of item 11 in the lab, the black plastic with the duct tape, yielded two latent prints.
Correct. Yes. Yes.
And both of those latent prints matched the known prints of whom?
Alexander Lamar Cox.
Okay. One moment, if I may, Your Honor.
Yes.
And just a real quick question, the hairs that you were able to obtain and pull, those were submitted and retained at the lab for further testing if necessary, correct?
Yes. So I repackaged them into a new coin envelope just to keep them all contained, and then they returned to the original packaging, and that was when I was done with my processing, that went back into the vault for someone else to check out if needed.
Okay. Because you don't do hair examination?
No.
You don't do DNA?
No. Nope.
And those hairs, however, were collected by you and Ms. Dace and saved for future testing, either at your lab or another lab?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I have nothing further.
We have no questions, Judge.
Okay.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
That was ISP forensic scientist Tara Martinez testifying in the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell. There's much more to come, much more courtroom audio for you. and press subscribe so you don't miss any of it. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.